We're still 3 years away from the next counting of the American people. The census takes place every 10 years, all years that end in zero. So 2020 is the next census. And after we know where the people live, our states redraw the lines for legislative and congressional districts because they have to be roughly equal. In California, it's now a nonpartisan process handled by an appointed commission. Oregon still has a partisan process, but new Secretary of State Dennis Richardson, a Republican, is exploring possible changes with the formation of a nonpartisan redistricting task force. Three members join us. Alan Zundel is the head of the Pacific Green Party in Oregon. Alan, welcome to the exchange.
Thank you.
Representative Julie Parrish joins us. She is a Republican from District 37 in the State House. Welcome, Representative Parrish.
Hi, thanks.
And Phil Kiesling is with us as well. He is the former Secretary of State of Oregon and a Democrat. So we have three different parties represented just here at this table today. Phil Kiesling, thank you for joining us.
You bet.
So let's start with Alan Zundel. You're the task force administrator. Tell us about how the process started and what the charge is to this task force.
Well, I'm not sure how it started because I came in after things had already begun. Dennis Richardson called me and asked me if I'd like to be on the task force. I think it was initiated because several legislators had bills in the hopper pertaining to reforming the way they redistrict, and he thought it would be good to get other people involved in the process to talk about something and maybe come to a consensus on one idea.
And so the idea was just to explore, or was there any particular, like, give me a blank by this date?
Well, we only had five sessions scheduled, so we hope within about a week or so to have something to propose. It looks like we may be converging on something very similar to what they're doing in California, but we'll see.
All right, Julie Parrish, let's come to you. It's not like Oregon has some of the truly odd-looking districts of other states, but as a member of a minority party in the legislature, do you have some issues with how district lines are drawn now?
Well, I was here for the last redistricting that we did in 2011. That was my freshman year, and it was pretty green. And now that I've been here for a while, you can see the results of that redistricting. You know, when you've got communities in Clackamas, where I live, and a place like Happy Valley that is represented by four state reps, and it's about a town of 26,000 people, from a legislating process, it actually creates kind of a different problem, not necessarily on the campaign side, but in the building, you suddenly have blocks of legislators that overrepresent their communities, and you see that play out for dollars that are delivered to those communities and policy support and things. And so I think that it's not just a, you know, a campaign issue of R's or D's or other parties. It sometimes actually plays out in the legislature when you wind up with chunks of, you know, communities that are really overrepresented and have more legislative authority, if you will, from their members, than, you know, a town like Ashland that has one state rep. So, and I used to live in Southern Oregon. So, you know, you've got a brand new state rep. She's probably going to have less say than the four state representatives from Happy Valley.
So really, Happy Valley is divided up between four different representative districts?
Yep, it is.
Wow. Is it just because there are that many people there, or because their corners all meet in Happy Valley or something?
Well, Happy Valley is a, by itself, is a more conservative-leaning district, so it's been carved into pieces. And one corner of that Bill Kinnemer represents, is still connects to some more conservative communities. And the other three corners of Happy Valley have been parsed into bluer districts. We see that a little bit in Washington County. You see it in Salem. So there's areas where you've got some over-representation just because of the way the lines got drawn.
It's interesting to watch how that process works. I remember after the 1990 census that the city council in Medford, rather than having four different state legislators to deal with in the House, decided they wanted one district representing the entire city. And so so that's how that came about. But I want to come back a little bit to Phil Kiesling, because you did work on redistricting as the Secretary of State. So what we haven't talked about is how the system works now. Phil, what is the process?
Well, let me first comment on the 1991 Medford situation, because I was the person responsible for
that. Oh, good. Sure. And
it's always a debate in communities as to, you know, one side will say, let's put everybody together in a city if it can fit in a House district. Others might make the argument, well, we have three or four people represent chunks of us, we have even more power. First of all, the principle of redistricting that I think should be followed, and it's in the law, although there's not precise standards, is a community of interest. We actually made the decision in 1991 in doing the redistricting that whenever possible, we would put a city, within the same House district. And I think out of 244 cities, or something like 200-plus cities that could have been put in a single district, I think we did the case with all but three of them, and there were some other special cases with other criteria. So that was the principle we used back in 1991, and again, people can debate it, but we felt that that's what the law really was pointing to do, even if the people in a particular community, some of them said, please divide us. The way it works is that if the legislature fails in its task by a certain day, July 1, the task falls to the Secretary of State, who does the state legislative redistricting. And if they fail to do congressional redistricting, that goes into a federal court process, and that you end up getting judges doing it. So this is an effort to try to revisit that approach and say maybe we ought to start with a special commission and leave it there, and then have the commission do the work instead, and have it subject ultimately to court review, which every redistricting plan is.
So it starts with the legislature, but if the legislature doesn't complete it on time, then it's the Secretary of State's job, which raises the question, does every Secretary of State basically stand prepared to do this?
Well, you only have 45 days, and we knew from the get-go back in 1991 that it was a possibility because you had a divided situation in the legislature, Democrats controlling one House, Republicans another, Democratic governor. We had a situation in 2001 that was even more contentious, in which it also fell to the Secretary of State. Now, in 2011, the legislature did manage to do it, and it's to their credit. There seemed to be a real bipartisan effort to do it. But circumstances differ all the time. So any Secretary of State, even today, and Secretary Richardson, I know, has it on his mind, obviously, knows that it's something that's a possibility that's looming out there.
We're talking to members of the Redistricting Task Force formed by the Secretary of State. It's the Nonpartisan Redistricting Task Force.
And I'm not a member.
I understand. You're an advisor?
Yeah. No, I basically was asked to testify, and I said I'd be delighted to do it. And Secretary Richardson asked me, since I had done before, to weigh in on it. So I'm happy to do that.
All right, Phil Keyes.
It's one of the few things I know something about.
I would say that his weighing in did make an impression on the task force. So we really are following a lot of the suggestions he made.
Okay, we're talking to Phil Kiefling, former Secretary of State, Democrat. Ellen Zundel, you heard in there as well, the head of the Pacific Green Party in Oregon, who is on this redistricting task force, with Republican Representative Julie Parrish from District 37 in Clackamas County. You can join the discussion as we talk about redistricting and how the process is handled, and if you got to draw the lines in your own legislative district, what might you change? Who would you like to be included with? What communities? That sort of thing. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Alan, who else is on the task force? You're not the only third-party guy on there, I see.
No, we look like we're going to be adding a libertarian at the last minute because it was hard to find somebody. They also have the Independent Party, the Progressive Party, someone from the League of Women Voters, and we've had people testifying from other citizens groups, things like that. Some Republican legislators, a Democrat legislator, and a Republican senator.
So, and I wonder, as the head of the Pacific Green Party, what it's like to watch the two big parties do the major tussling over district lines, and if you often feel like chopped liver as part of that discussion.
Well, it seems like it doesn't affect us one way or another, because given the two-party system, it's hard for us to get the numbers up that we would have a chance, no matter how they draw the lines. Where our focus has really been is changing the voting process so other parties have more of a shot, more of a fair shot.
How would you like to see the voting process changed?
Well, we looked at things like instant runoff voting, and there's a new technique that has been proposed recently that may be even better. But on the redistricting task force, we've been particularly interested in multi-member districts. In other words, a district wouldn't just elect one member to the Senate or to the House in the state. They would be electing several and using a system like proportional representation to assign the seats within that larger district.
Can you explain that a little further?
Sure. I'm not sure what was not clear about it, but a district would be larger. Instead of having three separate districts with three separate senators elected, you would have one larger district that all the people in that larger district voted, and then depending on how the vote comes out, you assign the three seats within that district By relative support. Whoever got the most support would get a seat, and then you do some kind of adjustment process to see who has the next most support, and so on and so forth. It's a little complicated to explain it, but it does come out a little more fairly from a number of perspectives, but it doesn't seem likely that that's something we're going to be able to mandate. We just want to make sure it's something that's possible in the future.
Okay. Has there been any discussion of in task force meetings so far?
Yeah, we had one, part of one session where we had a presentation from a woman from a think tank who explained the concept and some of the good points about it.
Julie Parrish, is there much analysis among legislators and within your party, particularly the Republicans, about whether legislative composition by party might be different if the lines were drawn differently?
Well, I think they could be done differently. And to Alan's point about multi-member districts, we actually used to do that in Oregon, and then that changed. And so, you know, there's a look to go back to that. And in a multi-member district, you could theoretically, like say in a Portland district, you could theoretically elect somebody from a minor party that's a progressive or green minor party, kind of a left-leaning party, along with a Democrat in a multi-member district. So it opens up some fairness that way. We also, you know, one of the other members on the committee is a non-affiliated voter, and that is the fastest rising block, especially after motor voter, of voters, is people who are selecting to not be in a party. And so I think, you know, the time is right because I've watched 41 legislators. I've been here for three terms already. This is the beginning of my fourth term, and I've watched 41 other legislators who were more senior than me come and go. So the odds are by the time 2021 rolls around, a big chunk of us won't be here. So the time to start thinking about redistricting really is now, and to have these conversations and what could it look like and how do you make it more fair. I mean, I've even asked voters in polling before, you know, should the legislature be nonpartisan? Nebraska does that, mm-hmm. And don't run with party labels at all, and voters have actually said they'd be very interested in that conversation. It would be tough to get that out of the building. You'd have to almost do that as a signature gathering petition initiative, but I think that voters are really tired of us coming down here and sort of just as Republicans and Democrats, because it's very clear a big chunk of the state is neither.
Phil Kiesling, how good is the information that is available now to be used to figure out where people are and how to draw lines that make districts roughly equal in population?
Yeah, it's extraordinarily accurate. Big revolution has happened in data processing and mapping technology. Back in 1981, this was literally done on big Mylar maps spread across tables with marker pens. By 1991, you had the first rudimentary kind of GIS system, and so we were able, when we did it, to look at various combinations. Today, with a punch of the button, you literally have access to infinite numbers of configurations. One of the key things, though, in redistricting, whoever does it, and especially if an independent commission does it, is to have transparency to the system and have it be done to the extent possible in full view of the public. At the end of the day, these lines ought to reflect the communities of interest. That's a clear statutory and constitutional term. You have prohibited from doing certain things like diluting certain communities, racial minorities. And I think it's important to look at issues like, you know, major geographic boundaries. You don't want to keep crossing the Cascade Mountains with districts, you know, that straddle it because of transportation and ease of representing a district. But there's an infinite number of possibilities. So the key is in doing this work that citizens be able to see it and weigh in. You're always going to get shot at by people who don't like a particular map. You can't please everybody, but you want to try to have as much fealty as you can to those basic criteria that people understand ahead of time before the maps get finalized that, yeah, those are reasonable, legitimate criteria to use.
But, you know, since you have to make these roughly equal, you have to make some compromises. I mean, Eastern Oregon does not have enough people for its own congressional district, so at some point you're going to have to cross the Cascades to pick up some more people, right?
Yeah, that's right. And what happened and what has happened in recent years is you have crossed that particular geographic boundary in the southern part of the state where there's probably more transportation linkages. But right now the second district includes parts of Jackson County, Josephine County. And may even stretch even further. I'm not exactly familiar about how that particular one now, has played out. Now, there's a good chance we'll get a sixth congressional seat after the census is done in 2020. 21, and that that'll change things, and that might actually push that district in some new directions. So, you know, it's a fluid situation. It always changes. The minute you do a redistricting plan, it in some ways comes out of sync in terms of exact population distribution. You may be exact on a given day, and then 2 weeks later, 2 months later, 2 years later, it's obviously has changed because of population demographics and dynamics. But you are obligated to get as close as practicable, and it's a even stricter standard for congressional seats than for state legislative seats in terms of how courts have ruled.
We're talking about redistricting in the state of Oregon. Secretary of State Dennis Richardson set up a nonpartisan redistricting task force to look into possibilities for other ways to do this in a nonpartisan way, perhaps similar to what California does with its nonpartisan Commission. Alan Zundel from the Pacific Green Party, the head of the Pacific Green Party, is with us. Representative Julie Parrish, a Republican from District 37 in the Portland area. And you just heard from former Democratic Secretary of State Phil Kiesling, who has testified before the task force. You can join us on the exchange with questions and comments at 800-838-3760 about your own district and how you might like it to be shaped. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the exchange.
Good morning. I've missed a lot of this, and I'm very sorry. This is near and dear to my heart. I hope that the nonpartisan nature of this board continues. I'd like to know how the board was selected by the current Republican Secretary of State, and whether you were using MapTitude or not. That goes back to one of your earlier interviews, Ratfucht. that you had on, Jeff, a long time back. That's the best, closest I can come to that.
Yes, carefully said. I appreciate that. Okay.
Right. So those are my two questions.
Can I address that a little bit on the how we got here part?
Yeah. I'd like to know that, and I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
So on the how we got here part, it started with a handful of us who had bills. So independently, Senator Canope from Bend, myself, and Ted Ferrioli from Eastern Oregon, a handful of us had gone out and drafted our own bills. Secretary Richardson, I think, has working on a bill with Representative Barker, a Democrat from Beaverton. So individually, there were all these little efforts going. Outside of the building, there were discussions happening from non-legislators about ballot initiatives. And so this became more of a little bit of a cat-herding effort on the part of the secretary, because he felt like, okay, there's all these different efforts. Can we, rather than try to have two or three things on the ballot, really pull everybody who has an interest together into the room and then start a conversation of, is there some consensus? You know, we're leaning towards the model that California is doing that seems to be where folks want to go. That looks very different than the model I brought as an individual bill, which would have involved county commissioners picking judges and allowing individual parties to appoint their own member and having the governor appoint a non-affiliated member. The sizes that were that people brought, you know, five-member commission versus a 15-member commission. So there was just a lot of different ideas about how to do it based on things that are happening in other states. And so pulling us all together into a room, it was, I think we all, a lot of us self-selected, and then you heard Alan say that, you know, Dennis called him up and said, would you do this committee administrating? There was an article in the Willamette Week, you know, this isn't fair, it doesn't have enough women or minorities or Democrats or whatever, and I'm like, it's a group of us who want to work in the evening after the legislature has gone home at night, who care about the topic and had our own ideas, and so I don't think there was anything sort of nefarious in putting the group together as the Willamette Week wanted to you know, kind of allude to, but it was a group of us who really said, we care about this. We think now's the time before it gets close to redistricting. Those of us who may not even be here in a few years, so you get out of the problem of this is my seat and my district and my community and turn it back to the people and say these seats belong to the people. And so we felt like it's the right time to have that conversation several years ahead of the census and the next drawing of the lines to have an objective conversation about it before we get closer and it gets more contentious again. And so so I think most of us self-selected, and then I know the independent parties had interest in this. Sal Peralta, our third major party in Oregon, is sitting on this group with us. And so everybody had, this, like, independently had ideas, and this was more of a wrangling effort. And then we since added a few others who, you know, saw the article in the Willamette Week and said, wait a minute, I'd like to be involved too. And the door's been very open to bringing in people, so that's why you're seeing like the Libertarian Party is kind of coming, hey, now we want to be at the table as well. And I don't think the secretary has said anybody can't be at the table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so herding cats, though, as you pointed out, though, in the first part of this. Are any of you, Dennis Richardson, the secretary of state, when he put out the notice about the creation of the task force, showed some districts that do have some wiggles and wobbles, but they still don't look anything like, for example, the goofy kicking Donald Duck district in Pennsylvania. I mean, is anybody making the claim that Oregon has been horribly gerrymandered?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's horribly gerrymandered, but I would say that the actual impact in the building is such that, you know, only about 39% of the state is registered as a Democrat, and that's not reflected here in this building. I mean, we have a problem in the Capitol of also not reflecting the population of women or minorities or, you know, other folks as well. So when you have 61% of the state, obviously not all Republican, but they belong to other parties or they're not affiliated, we have a very disproportionate representation that's happening here in the Capitol, and it certainly shows up in some of the policy ideas that come out of this building. They're really very Portland-centric, where Portland has large, you know, chunks of legislators here, and it's disproportionate to what's happening in the issues that I think other parts of the state care about. So that it's actually causing a challenge, maybe not party-driven, but that urban-rural divide piece is really that I think been affected by this last round of redistricting.
Alan Zundel, just a couple seconds left. Meetings at Wednesdays at 5, is that right, through February and March?
Yeah, Wednesdays at 5 in the state capitol. We've got one tonight and one next week. We may extend it a little bit, but we haven't decided that yet.
All right, given the long day, I'm glad you all are joining us today. Alan Zundel is the head of the Pacific Green Party in Oregon. He and the Republican Representative Julie Parrish are on the nonpartisan redistricting task force. Phil Kiesling is a former Democratic Secretary of State who has spoken to the task force for some advice. Thanks to all of you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.